Hey, welcome along. It is 4 p.m. North American Eastern Time, 5 p.m. in the Canadian Maritimes, 5:30 p.m. in beautiful Newfoundland, 8 p.m. Greenwich Mean Time, 9 p.m. Western Europe, 10 p.m. Cairo and Jerusalem, 11 p.m. Moscow and Istanbul, and the early hours of Saturday morning for our Asian and Pacific listeners. Wherever you are across this grim grey planet this particular hour, we welcome you along to a kind of Corona Land Q&A rather than a regular Clubland Q&A. The big headline in the United States at the moment is that the chairman of the Senate Intelligence Committee and various of his colleagues were given a briefing about this thing a couple of months back. And what did they do? They unloaded all their stock in hotel chains and airlines and other hospitality chains. So they managed to make a few million bucks from doing that, but they didn't actually think to let anybody know. Insider trading on pandemics from the wankers of the United States Senate, the emirs of Incumbistan, who actually, without their, they're actually at pretty high risk from this thing. Did you take a look? Did you take a look at the average Senate committee hearing? Chuck Grassley, Dianne Feinstein, Pat Leahy. These are some of the oldest dinosaurs on the fruited plain. And they've got vast Gulf Emir-sized entourages of young people just back from spring break in on those Florida beaches. But this is a bipartisan criticism, because I loathe the emirs of Incumbistan of whichever party at the best of times. But I think so far it's up to about six now from this crappy intelligence committee, a useless body, that got the information and decided this was a perfect... They got this information about what is happening now, months ago, 2 months ago, and they decided the relevant part of this information is we need to unload our stocks in Comfort Inn and Vegas casinos and United Airlines, because they're all going to be tanking in a couple of months. What awful people. Before we get to your questions, I want to say one thing, which is related really to what we do here at Stein Online. As you know, we do things that are in print, things that are in audio, such as this, and things that are in video. And there's not a lot of websites that do all three. And we're perceived, basically, because I'm always here fronting it, as basically a one-man operation. But it's not actually. If you saw our Song of the Week this week, which was a cracking centennial celebration of Al Jolson's and Giacomo Puccini's only involuntary collaboration, I Found My Love in Avalon Beside the Bay. Given an exhilarating workout, that 100-year-old song, by my special guests, Carol Wellsman and Russell Malone. But they weren't the only people involved in it, as you know, if you saw it. We also had our terrific band, which is Mathieu on bass and Michel on drums and John on guitar and Jean-Pierre on saxophone and Bill on trumpet. And we also had, obviously, our cameramen. That was Whitaker and Michael and Liam and Sully. And we had our audio guys. That's Pierre and Renee and their colleagues. And we had lighting people, and we had hair and makeup people. And we had an audience, which included, off the top of my head, people from at least five countries. And we could do none of that today. And we don't know when we'll be able to do something like that again. It didn't seem a terribly exotic or unusual event a couple of weeks ago, but it's absolutely impossible to do now for the foreseeable future. Not least, as I said, because there's people there from different countries and national borders are shut down. So we can't do that. But even just like more modest things, like some of my little video hits require great attention to detail by my devoted makeup artist, Rachel. She has to get sort of nose to nose with me and spend hours removing all the imperfections. That's not so easy to do. And we've only had it for 3 or 4 days, but I'm sick of I didn't buy like a 78-inch television screen to look at Skype-a-vision all day long, where you're looking at people in some grim, crepuscular study or basement being photographed from the most unflattering angle on the computer, which is straight up your nose from where they're sitting, so that you risk what television persons like to call a bat in the cave in the relevant nostril. And you're looking at all these people with sallow skin. As I said, it's not a good look. I'm tired. It's only been on for 3 or 4 days, and I'm a bit sick of the Skype-a-vision. And it's a great shame. We're rethinking the way we do some things here at Stein Online. We're going to keep it going until they shut down the internet, which I don't entirely rule out. The European Union all has already warned Netflix and Go to knock it off with the high definition streaming services, and you can easily foresee them contacting Google and Facebook, the great planetary duopoly, to agree that the internet can only be used for national emergency purposes now. I don't rule that out in a few weeks' time. But it's a great reminder that we're going to try and keep things going here in the way we do. We may tweak a few of our formats. We may even actually have a staff meeting and come up with a new idea of something to do. You never know. It could get really creative. But I look at what Carol did just a couple of days ago for our Song of the Week with Russell Malone and that terrific version of Avalon. And I wonder when we'll all be able to get together in a room and kick together a hot song like that again. Carol has a new album out. And believe me, after 3 months of subsisting on nothing but toilet paper and ammo, you might be in the mood for some new music. And you can support Carol's album because she's got some kind of Kickstarter thing where you can go along and attend the recording sessions once the borders are open and they've reintroduced mass transit. But I'll put the thing up about Carol's album because I'm trying to find the light at the end of the tunnel. And Carol's new album is a little bit of that light. I said on the radio on Monday that the metric I follow is the Italian death toll. When I said that, the death toll was actually, I wouldn't have called it modest then. And it's not really modest now, but it's modest by the way the week had gone. When I said that I always followed the death toll from daily death toll out of Italy, the daily death toll out of Italy was 349, and that was a new daily record outpacing anything that had been done from that had come from China. We're now almost double that. Today's daily death toll, it was announced just a couple of hours ago, is 627. As I said, proportionately, that's the equivalent now of a 9/11 every day, if that holds. And that is why I pay attention to that particular metric. Let us get on to your questions on this Coronaland Q&A and see what you have to say. Our pal Kate Smythe, whom you know from Australia and is an occasional contributor here. Kate says, "Hello, Mark. It's clear that China is an existential threat to the rest of the world. In terms of your recent coinage, BC before COVID and AD after disease, should the West not only decouple from China but severely cripple it? Are demands for reparations likely to be successful? Thanks, Kate." And Kate adds, "As reported in the Hong Kong Free Press, quote, China could have prevented 95% of coronavirus infections if its measures to contain the outbreak had begun 3 weeks earlier, research from the University of Southampton suggests. However, China only took vigorous action in late January, weeks after police silenced the doctor for trying to raise the alarm. I keep hearing from Western political leaders that this is war and we need to invoke war measures laws to deal with it. Well, if we're at war, China committed war crimes. I said on the radio Monday or Tuesday that China is not fit to be a member of the community of nations. I get sick of this. I get sick, so bored by these stupid, witless American journalists who sit in that idiotic briefing room every day and can think of no question to ask. There are so many interesting questions we could ask. As well, oh, are you being racist in insisting on calling it the Chinese virus, Mr. President? There are, as I write, something like 160 countries in the world. And that's basically the 160 functioning countries. There's about 200 countries in the world. The 40 that claim not to have the coronavirus are simply those too incompetent to know whether they've got it yet. But officially, 160 countries in the world have the coronavirus. 159 of those countries got it from another country. There is only one country on the planet that created this itself and as a gift to the world, and that is China. And we're now getting these things congratulating China because they didn't have any new cases, I think it was yesterday. And now they're complaining, the Chinese, that there are people flying into China. There's Europeans and Americans and other riffraff flying into China and reinfecting them. So China, which has one of the most evil governments on the planet, managed to come up with a disease that right now, as we speak, is infecting every other nation on the planet, but not China. That really, you've got to hand it to these fellas on the Politburo. They're really clever about these kind of things, aren't they? I don't want to hear decadent, stupid Columbia Journalism School halfwits, essentially, people who paid $250,000 to get the worthless bit of paper that entitles them to go and peddle this garbage at the New York Times and CNN. I don't see the point of going to Columbia Journalism School if you're just going to peddle, recycle Chinese propaganda. You shame free peoples, you unbelievable. Brian from Minneapolis says, "Dear Mark, even in the midst of a global pandemic, identity politics are priority one for the left. They side with the commies in China by spreading their propaganda and shutting down people with calls of racism for calling it a Chinese virus. They even went after you when you talked about San Fran shutting down and said you blamed it on gays. This pandemic did more than put our health and economies at risk, but reveal to us the deadly ball and chain the Western world has agreed to with China. Globalist ignorance or maybe greed will cause this alliance to be maintained even more so when this pandemic is under control. In many ways, the globalists have given the West to China on a silver platter." Your thoughts, Mark? Yes, I agree. And that's why I don't want to wait to start talking about decoupling until this thing ends, if it ever does. I want to decouple now. We have to decouple now. We have a government in China that has threatened to withhold basic drugs. That government makes all our drugs. Wherever you live, whether you live in the United States, it doesn't matter what kind of health system you got. All these quibbles about this healthcare system versus that healthcare system are irrelevant. Whether you live in the United States or Canada, Britain, Australia, Europe, you get your drugs from China. I think it was Walt Trimmer who made an excellent comment the other day about this malaria drug that they're now going to use to try and treat this thing. And he went on to the internet and he looked it up. And if you're in, I think it was in Botswana or somewhere, he says it costs 4 cents a pill. If you're in the United States, it costs, of course, $2.50 per pill, even though these two pills are both made in the same Chinese factory, as Walt pointed out. That's got to end. That's got to stop. The fact is, the great, in a nutshell, the great stupid delusion of this dance of death that we got locked into with the Chinese Politburo 30-something years ago, rested on the proposition that by bringing China into the global economy, you would make China more like us. Instead, we're getting more like China. The land of the First Amendment is full of journalists pointing fingers at the podium and saying, you can't say that. Why don't you just piss off and work for Beijing? You know, if there was a plane, I'd be in favor. If there were still any flights, I'd be in favor of driving them all to the airport and just shipping them over there, and they can do a job they're apparently well trained for. We didn't make China more like us. We're getting more like China, whether you're talking about CNN or the NBA kissing and greasing up to these people and agreeing to Chinese limitations on speech. Right now, we need wider speech. Brian from Minneapolis mentions my remarks about gays, which all the usual shrieking ninnies are upset about. Do you know something? I actually follow this news in some detail. And if you've got HIV, you've got a compromised immune system. And that's the point I was making, that if you have a population with a compromised immune system, you bloody well better have those people stay home, because this thing, we're told it kills old people. It kills your maiden aunt, nice Auntie Mabel. But it doesn't just kill nice Auntie Mabel. It also runs riot through immunocompromised populations, such as the gay population of San Francisco, or actually countries in Africa, which haven't yet really reported on this thing, but where you have, in some places, 40 or 50% of people are infected with HIV. When they get something like this, that country is just going to implode. So it's a serious business. This isn't a time, oh, you homophobe. No, I'm not a homophobe, you're a racist. No, I'm not a racist, you're a transphobe. It's all stupid. We have the most stupid media on the planet. God help us. Damien Carberry says, g'day, Mark. That's the clue to where he's from. I notice the media rarely report on people who recover from the coronavirus. Last week, one of Her Majesty's Australian ministers was hospitalised with corona. He took a strong dose of paracetamol. I think that's what they call acetaminophen here, I think, the paracetamol. They don't have paracetamol, they call it that. It's acetaminophen. It's like the Tylenol. The old joke in paracetamol countries like Australia and the UK is, why are there no aspirin in the jungle? Because the paracetamol. Because the paracetamol. why are there no aspirin anywhere? Because China's refusing to export it to us. Anyway, he says he took this last week. One of Her Majesty's Australian ministers was hospitalised with corona. He took a strong dose of paracetamol and is now back at work. In the absence of comprehensive statistics, why should we believe this virus is significantly worse than a bad seasonal cold or flu? As many club members have asked, can't Italy be explained by demographics and socialized medicine? Well, it's true that Italy has a more elderly population than, say, Yemen. But that in itself doesn't explain the difference between, for example, what's happened in other countries. The thing about who recovers is not a static feature. I mean, Damien, I think it's an interesting question. None of us really know anything at the moment, except that if you notice the statistics out of France, for example, more young people, however you care to define it, are dying. In Spain, a civil guard who was, I believe, 37 years old, is dead. In New York State and Washington State, two doctors in their 40s are in critical condition. And in Vermont, the health guy in Vermont, who's not someone used to giving daily press briefings and isn't terribly reassuring on it, and he was talking about elderly people, elderly that, elderly what, whatever, and he was asked, well, how do you define elderly in Vermont? And so the Vermont health guy at the governor's press conference said, elderly, well, you know, 65 and up. So life expectancy in Vermont has apparently taken a turn for the worse. And if this thing keeps up in a couple of weeks' time, he's going to be defining elderly as what, 54, 39? That's a fast descending statement. But on the recovery, which is, Damien, which I think is an important point, it's important to understand that according to what's, there's no fixed recovery rate. For example, you could have a disease that, you could have an infection that 100 people get, and one person dies of it. But 99 people recover. So it would seem good because you'd have a 99% recovery rate. Then you have 100,000 cases with the same, you would think it would have the same 1% death, which would be 1,000 deaths. No, because you'd have to have 99,000 people recover. And a lot of those people who recover have to go to hospital. And when you've got 100 cases, 99 people can all get a hospital bed. When you've got 100,000 cases, 99,000 people can't get into hospital, and so the recovery rate declines. We have seen emerging from the United Kingdom, it was one reason why Boris changed his herd immunity strategy, is that of those that do require hospitalization, who include many young people, about 30% of them require an ICU bed. And there is no health system on the planet that has that capacity to take that many people and put them in ICU beds. Nowhere. Nowhere. And you're arguing essentially about whether this system only has is in the position where it has one ICU bed for every 20 it needs. And the other system has one ICU bed for every 8 or 9 it needs. But that's kind of in the Western world, that's kind of the territory that you're operating in until the whole system just gets overwhelmed. And then so many doctors and nurses have died that, as in Italy, they're asking elderly retired doctors to turn up and work at the hospital. So there's even, you can't even say at this, until we know what grip on the population the disease has, you can't even estimate whether it has, you know, I mean, it's true, and good luck to those people who are just sort of sniffling around the house for a few days and then clear up. Zach says, statistically, if not emotionally, COVID is proving to be just a new or different colour of the herd. Targets the frail, old, sickly. Where it might have said heart, lung or cancer disease, the death certificate will now substitute COVID. The background death rate will be compressed for a time, but likely not discernible against a rolling multi-year average. Yet we are shuttering the economy and letting old people die in complete isolation, without family or loved ones, where the last human touch is from the glove of an unknown astronaut. There was life and society in days before antibiotics. Polio, poxes, plagues, they used to be just part of the many risks life presents. But for this one, we are upending livelihoods, businesses, schools, relationships, just so 80-year-old sedentary ex-smokers can make it to 81. and all with very little debate, just passive acquiescence. That's true, although I would caution that, as I said, you know, that 80 to 81 thing isn't necessarily the full story of what they mean by elderly. I've noted that the Vermont Health guy defines elderly now as 65. The question is though, not who dies. Let me back up. Some of these questions would have been pertinent and relevant had we not been cowed by political correctness into not talking about this honestly back in January. So in January, when tosspots like the mayor of Florence were telling everyone to go out and hug a Chinese person, we were still in the politically correct until death mode. If we'd been having the conversation that Zach was talking about in his question, that would have made no sense. Right now, the priority here is to avoid the complete collapse of modern Western healthcare systems. So it's not really about who dies, but about how many get it to collapse the healthcare system. And in London, for example, Greater London, extending out to, Harrow and places, the hospitals are already beyond capacity. They haven't really gotten hit. They're supposedly 2 weeks behind Italy, but they're already overwhelmed in the Greater London area. And something of that, that's what this is trying to prevent. Now, it's a bad business because, but it again, the business goes back to our deformed relationship with China. People are mad because they're in, basically, most Western societies have become service industries of one kind or another. So people are mad because they work as waitresses, and suddenly, while these evil senators are cashing in their restaurant chain and hotel chain stocks, the poor old waitress doesn't hear about it until 2 months later and is just laid off with no support whatsoever. But it's like, it's such a bizarre thing in some ways if you think back to just the way our societies were a few years ago. You know, now we have people who work at theme parks, who work at multiplexes, who work at shopping malls. Our whole society is like, what do they call it in France? In France, the Virgin Megastore is called la culture du plaisir, the culture of pleasure. And almost everything is all about the culture of pleasure now. So that when you invoke War Measures Acts, most people don't actually have a consequential job. I mean, what is consequential about, you know, working at Disneyland? And so that again is something we need to get back. We need to actually start doing real primal economic activity, not just this peripheral culture du plaisir stuff. These are long-term lessons that we're being invited to learn in a couple of weeks. Scott Scherzer writes, "Dear Mark, I feel as though I belong to the tiniest minority in thinking that we have overreacted by a factor of 100 to the coronavirus. The stock market has dropped by a third, small businesses are closing or being stressed to the breaking point, and many at the lowest rung are now unemployed. In the face of this horrendous economic destruction, the American populace has gone along meekly. Those I speak with think I am crazy, but this current outbreak doesn't strike me as being any more lethal than the seasonal flu. I don't wish to minimize the grief of any families that have lost loved ones to COVID-19. But is it necessary to virtually shut down our entire economy in the face of this pandemic? I fear for the future, as it seems we have lost all perspective on how to manage risk in a rational manner." Well, you know, that's Scott from my Miami Beach. One difference between this and a conventional flu season is it seems to be tightening its grip on places that don't have flu seasons. You know, in Australia, the flu season is June to August. This isn't flu season, but the coronavirus has afflicted persons there, as we just heard, and it. And so the idea that this thing will start to die out in March or April isn't clear. Nobody thinks that. Nobody thinks that anymore. Among the epidemiologists and so forth. And as I said, the death rate in Italy is so staggering. This 627 cases. No, that doesn't. That's not something, that's not a seasonal flu. The question is whether you're different from Italy. Right now, if you look at the trend line, if you look at the curve, everywhere that anybody cares about, because, you know, you have to have the world's most bountiful heart to be following, you know, Somali statistics on this or whatever. But basically, everywhere... In Europe, Britannia's lion cubs, the United States, they're all following the same trend line. They're just a few days behind Italy. There are two exceptions to that. Sweden and Denmark have somehow managed to actually lower the curve and put themselves on a decelerating trend line, and I noticed this in the daily statistics, and intend to give that some more thought as to why that's happening. But the question is, you're then betting when you're showing a line that is like Italy's, exactly, can be overlaid precisely on Italy's early stages of infection. And then having to ask yourself whether we're so different from Italy that it won't happen here. Benjamin Bumgardner says, "Hi, Mark. Personally, I'm sick, pun intended, of hearing about the Chinese flu. After reading Call of the Wild twice this week, inspired by your reading of my favourite short story, I don't know, we've done a couple of Jack London short stories. We did To Build a Fire, which is brilliant. And we did The White Silence, which is a little less brilliant, but is also a very powerful story. They're on there on our Tales for Our Time page. Everyone's going to be spending a lot of time at home. And my God, there's a lot of lousy television around, and there's a lot of rubbish on iTunes. So if you'd like to treat yourself to one of the greatest short stories ever written, To Build a Fire, that is up there on our Tales for Our Time page, and we would love it if you would like to go and listen to my reading of that. Anyway, Benjamin Bumgarten says, after reading Call of the Wild twice this week, inspired by your reading of my favourite short story, I've decided to live full speed ahead and spend time on the water, fishing and enjoying the solitude, as opposed to hiding in my home waiting for the plague to show up. The real question in my mind is, will America form a collective backbone against the Chinese aggression and take back our manufacturing and our lives, regardless of the cost? That's an important lesson, Benjamin, that everyone thinks the only consequence of doing business with China is that Walmart is full of cheap crap, and all the mills and factories in American towns have closed. But it goes way beyond that. It isn't just that this stupid relationship that the Paul Ryan right, God rot them, got us into. It doesn't just affect that. It's actually that, as we see with Chinese propaganda dictating how the American media cover the story, that actually, as Benjamin says, the funky Chinamen in funky Chinatown are controlling our lives. The price of cheap crap at Walmart is not worth the funky Chinamen controlling our lives. More importantly, are there any leaders with the backbone to stand up to our ruling class and entrenched bureaucracy that can get this done without their feet being cut out from under them? I don't know. I had my feet cut out from under me the last couple of days over HIV-type stuff. And I don't know. I think it does actually need a mass wake-up. In other words, after SARS, SARS was a wake-up call for Singapore, for example, which built a new hospital, purpose-built, to deal with this kind of thing, gift from China. Because Singapore knows well its neighbours. So Singapore had essentially a coronavirus hospital, purpose-built, and it got this thing under control very quickly. After SARS, we all went back to sleep, and we shouldn't have, because as I said at the time, if it isn't, we dodged a bullet here, but if it isn't this thing, it'll be the next one. And so I hope we don't just go all back to sleep after this is all over. You know, you're right, though, Benjamin, about spending time on the water fishing. I'm having to make some difficult decisions here because I have, among my loved ones, those with underlying conditions who would die if this thing were to sweep through the North Country. And in my extended corporate family, too. I mean, for example, our two IT guys both cannot leave the house at the moment. It would be, we have a few issues with some of our infrastructure in Stein corporate headquarters, and we can't actually get our IT guys out of their homes because it's not safe for them to leave their homes because of underlying conditions. And again, that's something that maybe... that's something to consider when people start saying, well, we're not Italy. We don't have socialized healthcare. Well, you know, America has actually quite a few young and middle-aged persons with underlying conditions. And it would be interesting to see how this thing, you know, that's you don't want to have to compare, you know, one country that's got a lot of old people with one country that's got a lot of sick middle-aged people and see who has the bigger pile of corpses. We all hope that isn't going to happen. But if you do have to be at home, Benjamin is an example to us. He's spending time on the water fishing and enjoying the solitude as opposed to watching the cable news and tearing his hair out. And I don't blame you for that, Benjamin. You know, earlier today, it was like one of these things it was as beautiful as a postcard, which these things aren't always of, but just this loon came sort of across my field of vision as I was staring out through the big picture window at the water, and just came across sort of eye level with me. Most beautiful thing. There's nothing, most beautiful thing. That's more beautiful than any CGI thing can do for you in X-Men 47. And it's necessary. It's healthier to do what Benjamin does and get out and spend time fishing on the water. And it's a good... Basically, we have to accept that this is... You're not going to talk because it's affected all governments across the Western world. Doesn't matter whether they're social democrat or socialist or liberal or conservative or populist, they're all basically saying they got to throw everything at this thing in an attempt to slow it down. That's all that's happening. They're just hurling stuff. It's like that bit in the horror movie where the boogeyman has come into the room and people are just picking up saucepans and hurling it at these guys in an attempt to slow the boogeyman down. And there's a reason for that. But if, say, Trump had opted for Boris's herd immunity strategy, and maybe it wouldn't really matter how many people died. 2 million people could die. 500,000 people could die. 500,000 people could die. And the media and the Democrats would still hang it all on Trump, and Joe Biden would be president after November's election, which also wouldn't do anything for the economy. So they're now trying to throw everything at it, slow it down, come out of it in time to hold an election in November. And I have to say, again, the Ohio primary got cancelled on Tuesday. There's going to be a lot more cancelled primaries in the days ahead. And who knows whether there'll be a November election. Peter writes, he quotes me, "Meanwhile, over in Crazyland, an Islamic scholar says COVID-19 is a soldier of Allah. If so, he's got a funny way of showing it. In Iran, the health ministry now says that one person dies of COVID-19 every 10 minutes. the quote was courtesy of memory. Pro-Al-Qaeda writer says coronavirus, tiny soldier of Allah. Since Al-Qaeda is an extreme Sunni sect that considers Shia Muslims worthy only of death, maybe the death toll of Shias in Iraq is Allah's holy wrath on Shia apostates. I mean, from Al-Qaeda's point of view. Yours in despair, says Peter." Well, you know something, Peter? Yeah, you are right. But I tell you what, you know, in this Sunni-Shia dispute, which is the, again, if your theory on Italy is they're just old, a lot of European countries are old. And so if the coronavirus just kills old people in Italy and old people in Spain and old people in France and old people in Germany, all it's going to do is accelerate the Islamization of the continent. And so the only disagreements will be between Sunni and Shia. But if I had to choose, I'd rather Allah was a Shia than a Sunni, I think. If you're a Sunni, you know, don't get all upset about that. You know what Al-Qaeda and ISIS have said. They've told you to steer clear of infidels for the duration. It's very dirty. You don't want to blow me up and then have all my infidel coronavirus things mingled with your body parts and disgusting the virgins when you get to paradise. So don't get me wrong on this. I'm just making an observation that if I had to choose, on balance, I'd probably go for a Shia Allah rather than a Sunni Allah. Grandma Judy writes, "Mark, is the Chivai worth destroying?" The Chivai, I don't know whether that's a good name for a virus. It sort of sounds like a dance craze to me. "Is the Chivai worth destroying our economy? Hard to believe we are now printing enough cash to make the dollar more and more worthless. Am I not right about this? And by the way, isn't just living a risk?" Trying to remain calm, Grandma Judy. It's true. And we are going to end up printing enough. Well, not me. I don't have the say-so on this. But assuming the building where this stuff is made remains uncontaminated. And actually, in China, they're vacuuming the money and disinfecting the money. We're now printing enough cash to make the dollar more and more worthless. I think this is true. But essentially, this is only an acceleration of the existing insanity. As you know, the U.S., as I said in my book After America, the U.S. is broker than any nation has ever been in the history of brokenness. To the point where it has to pay back whatever it is now, $25 trillion, just to get back to having nothing at all. By the time this thing's over, what do you want to bet on? $30 trillion, $35 trillion, $45 trillion to get back to having absolutely nothing at all. Absolutely astonishing. But again, an unusual advantage over other countries. And Pinkava, hope I said that right, says, "Hey, Mark, hope you're doing well. I don't know what is scarier, our nation's enemies taking advantage of our weak position during this time, the bureaucracy grabbing power, or scared people in general. At the same time, I'm grateful that we are under Trump and not Obama, who stockpiled arms for odd government agencies. What do you think is the most likely conspiratorial concern? At the same time, I'm glad to see that when I do go out, people are extremely helpful and chatty. besides staying healthy, what do you think is the best thing we can do here on the ground? And have you ever thought of starting up a Toby Young-style free speech union? Toby and I worked together years ago. Toby started a newspaper with Julie Birchall that I wrote for occasionally. So I've had a sort of little bit of a relationship with Toby Young, and actually I have a real admiration for him in that he got cancelled and pushed back against it. And I don't think I ought to start up a Toby Young-style free speech union, but I do think I do think perhaps we ought to open up a branch of a New Hampshire or even a Quebec branch of his free speech union, and I'd certainly be happy to participate in that. When you say what's the most likely conspiratorial concern, the one I think of is this. This thing started round about the time that Trump's trade war with China was accelerating. Trump decided that this was our last chance to pick a trade war with China. Otherwise, China's march to be the dominant economic power would be unstoppable, absolutely unstoppable. And I don't want that. As I said on the radio a couple of days ago, in the late 19th century, when America, Britain, Germany were competing for economic dominance, they were all operating by the same rules. China doesn't. It isn't a market on its own. It has these boutiques, cities, the boutique megalopolises along the coast, and then this vast hinterland where a bat bites a pig and thousands of people die. And in the modern age, that means that something that would have stayed up country in the 19th century now can be all over the planet in a couple of weeks. And I wish to prevent China's rise to power, because I think China has an evil government and it has pressing demographic and structural deformations that will make the actions it takes even more repugnant to the few of us, and I exclude here all New York Times and CNN reporters, to the few of us squeamish about getting into bed with China to that degree. Now, you know, you can say, oh, well, America is Britain was different from Germany and Germany was different from Britain. But they all figure that the way to economic dominance is you start a product, you bring it to market, which means by bringing it to your domestic market. And then if it takes off in your domestic market, you start to sell it overseas. And suddenly you find if you're a German manufacturer, you're competing with an American company and a British company. And that goes on a macro scale, and one of those nations emerges as the dominant economic power, as America did. The surrender of economic dominance. Again, people forget this, that the transition from British predominance after the Second World War to American predominance was the smoothest transfer of global power in history. The transfer of predominance from America to China is not going to be like that at all. And again, as I said, the basic deformation of which the pill factories are the most obvious example. We keep being told, oh, America, American pharmaceutical companies have the finest research departments in the world. Oh, that's true. But everything those researchers does eventually gets brought to market by factories in China. That's nuts. And the guys who let that happen, as I said, in particular, the Chamber of Commerce wing of the Republican Party should be utterly ashamed of themselves for letting that happen. Janet Long says, never mind reparations to undeserving folks here in America. How about reparations from China to the world in payment? Yeah, in payment for the deaths and economic havoc that they alone are responsible for. Yeah, maybe some people in Italy would have died because of the coronavirus. But 4,000 people have died because China covered this up for weeks and then, when it decided to acknowledge it had a problem, lied about it. Lied about it. And you can say, well, maybe you don't want to provoke them. You know, the Versailles Conference, which made Germany pay war reparations, that just made the Germans madder. Screw her! Screw it! We ought to be mad. It disturbs me that we are not mad enough. There has to be a price for China doing this, or they'll do it again, over and over and over and over, until they come up with something that works perfectly and we all drop dead in 20 minutes. So I agree with that. Peter Marsh says, hello, Mark. How long do you suppose Americans will put up with businesses being closed by order of the state and being told to stay indoors? In your opinion, what does that say about us being a, quote, free people? Well, I've noted before that shelter-in-place thing in Boston in the wake of the Boston Marathon thing when the Sarnaev brothers were on the loose and everyone in Boston was ordered to shelter in place. That struck me as a little bit extreme, just for two kooky Chechens or Dagestanis or whatever the hell they were roaming around the town. But people went along with it. I notice also that when we have these severe weather alerts and people are ordered to shelter in place, that they more or less go along with it. And I've joked for years that under martial law, no one would ever need to issue a curfew. You'd just say there's a severe weather alert and everyone would stay home in order to save the planet. At some point, this will not become tenable. It's the big Peter's question is worth asking, because the depredations that were put on free peoples during the Second World War, for example, which is just about the only thing within living memory for most Western nations about that. In the UK, for example, you know, you couldn't get this, you couldn't get that, this place was closed, that place was closed. You had to have food rationing coupons, which I wouldn't rule out coming to some countries, certainly if these toilet paper riots spread to other products. But the one good thing about that, there was a sort of conviviality that we were all in it together, as the cliche has it. So everyone's all in it together, and they can still go down to the pub every evening and have a few jars, and they can all sing, let's all go down the Strand, have a banana. And then the air raid sirens go, and the conviviality ends, and everyone goes home, and you wake up in the morning, you've dodged the bomb, but the street parallel to you wasn't so lucky and there's a bunch of dead people there. But people would still then be back in the pub saying, let's all get down the Strand, have a banana. And so you were literally, when you were told we're all in this together, you were literally in it together, because you're all there. Then, you know, the Yanks come and they're at these bases and they invite all the local girls to come and jitterbug with them to Glenn Miller. You know, you are all in it together like that. Here, what's so bizarre about this is that everybody, millions of people now, I think the figure is over 200 million people, are confined to their rooms if you're in a small flat, or to their homes if you're in the suburbs or whatever, and being told you can't leave. All you can do to show that we are together is, like the Italians and the Parisians are doing, you open the windows to the back of the court behind the apartment house, and you all serenade each other and have a big sing-along every evening. And my old chum Boris Johnson made a very good point when he was asked why these kinds of measures weren't introduced earlier. And the reason, he said, was that because it's asking a lot and people chafe. It's very hard to be told we're all in this together when, in fact, we're all in it isolated. No one's ever actually attributed, no one's ever tried that before. With the exception, I was just thinking about the London plague, but actually the self-isolation thing there was those who'd got it. Everyone else was going around. They avoided people in the streets. They did some of this social distancing. You know, you walked by on the southern side of the street, and the other guy walked on the northern side of the street. But they weren't being told they couldn't actually get, like the people of Paris are told they can't leave their homes without an exeat that you download from the internet. And if the police catch you out for anything, it doesn't matter whether you're walking your dog or going to the pharmacy without that exeat, you're arrested. And no one's tried that. And I share, to a certain extent, I share the concerns of people here that there's two things that can happen there. Either people chafe at it and ignore it and just tell the police to get stuffed. I mean, because, you know, the police can't shoot everybody and the police have got other problems they have to deal with at the moment. Or people do get used to it and comply with it and they emerge from the tunnel as a more docile and compliant people, in the way that the World War, basically, the World War strictures softened Britain and Europe up for socialism. It is a weird thing to say. Mick Wenlock writes, "So Mark, in addition to being sentenced to relive Edgar Allan Poe's Mask of the Red Death in our daily lives, thanks to the high twattage of the media, we are now being subject to the inane celebrities singing Imagine. Can you imagine the planning meeting for that piece of strategic brilliance? God almighty, is there no rest for the weary? Imagine is the only song you need to know. It works for everything. It works for when jihadists blow up Paris. There was that twit in Europe who used to drag his piano along. And even as they were still pulling bodies from the rubble, he'd be there with his piano playing, Imagine there's no countries. There's no end to it. And I don't know the guy, and I'm not really saying this, but I really would like someone to give him a thoroughly good horse whipping and chase him out of town when he shows up with his piano playing Imagine. But anyway, now celebrities are singing Imagine. It's a nihilist song. It's the worst. And I have a certain amount of respect for Paul McCartney and considerably less respect for John Lennon. But it's the most fatuous song even he wrote. Imagine. And it's the all-purpose song, the only song you know, the only thing you know. It's like if this is total societal collapse, and you know what they say about nuclear Armageddon, the cockroach will come scurrying out. If this is total societal collapse and everything is over, the cockroach that emerges from this will be singing Imagine. Imagine there's no countries. It isn't hard to do. No, it isn't. Not in Italy these days, not in Iran these days. The complete implosion of countries is actually rather easier to imagine. So if it's any consolation, Mick, this vile song applies, would seem to be a little more apt here than it is after those jihad attacks. We shall see. We shall see. I'm glad you mentioned Edgar Allan Poe's Mask of the Red Death. I love that story. I like that story very much, and we may well, in fact, dust that off for one of the Tales for Our Time. We're going to try a difficult straddle here. We got a Tale for Our Time that's going to be starting tomorrow, Saturday, here at Stein Online. And we're going to try something a little, we're going to try a difficult straddle in the days ahead, because there's no end to this. And as I said, we're going to have to modify some of what we do here. But we're going to try and do two things. We're going to try and provide some things that will clarify and enlighten you when it comes to what is happening with the coronavirus and its march around the world. So we're going to do the Corona Land stuff. And then we're going to do things that are just a bit of basic escapism from the Corona Land. Corona Land is crushing a lot of things I never thought I'd miss, like the Eurovision Song Contest. So we might have some attempts to get round the coronavirus are a bit lame. Like, for example, instead of Formula One, they're having virtual Grand Prix. I think the first one is in London over the weekend, where the Formula One drivers are basically playing video games against each other. And that strikes me as super lame. But I don't actually hold out, whereas holding an alternative Eurovision Song Contest here at Stein Online, I don't think would be quite so lame as the virtual Grand Prix that Formula One is trying to do. So we're going to try and provide some... We're going to try and provide content that keeps you up to date with honest and cold and hard insight into what's happening. And at the same time, we're going to do things that have nothing to do with the coronavirus and are just, as in the Great Depression, are just escapist things that will help get you through it. So we're going to try and maintain a difficult straddle in the days ahead, but I hope we get the balance right. And God knows, you know, I've been writing on the subject one way and another of total societal collapse for a long time. I don't actually enjoy it. It's not good for business. I've got like a couple of good selling books out there, but you know, that's one of the first things to collapse in a situation like this is the royalties checks. That's before the banking system collapses. My cruise. I am hopeful that our cruise will proceed. It is our intention to proceed when it is safe to proceed, and I hope we have our doughty crew with us. But that cruise alone is reason why it's not in my economic interest to be alarmist. I seek, as I always have done, to live in truth and not to have that truth mediated by corporate masters in league with the most evil government on the planet. But just to speak truth, to see the bright side of things, to bring you the dark stuff, but to lighten it up, which is to say all of what we do here, whether it's Carol and Russell doing their cracking version of Avalon, or whether it's this Corona Land Q&A is dedicated to the same mission. It is now after 5 p.m., North American Eastern Time. That is 9 p.m. Greenwich Mean Time. Wherever you are, particularly for our friends and Mark Stein Club members in Italy and in other afflicted parts of the world, stay safe and we will see you next time.